are now listening to The Brian Callen Show, rated the number one podcast of all time.
Of all time. Make sure you're ready, because this is the podcast where you are guaranteed to learn virtually everything.
We are sponsored by Hover. And basically, Hover is domain management made simple. All right, it's the quickest way to establish and buy a domain name. You can do it under 5 minutes. And if you've ever registered a domain, you know the companies just try to upsell you stuff you don't need. I don't know if that ever happens to you. It's like, you want this? You want this option? No, I don't. I just want to do this, please. I just want to buy one domain. Thank you very much. And here's the best thing about Hover. They have a no-hold phone policy. You don't hold. You just get to somebody. It's fantastic. So if you ever run into a problem, you just call Hover, and a real live human being will answer the phone. Ah! Sorry, I'm getting excited. And by the way, you can get a .com domain, but guess what? You can also get a .net domain, which is totally underused, all right? So don't – I always forget that. I'm always looking at .com, but in fact, you know, you can use a .net. I know a lot of people that are doing it. So I say do it. It's easy. It's a pretty popular choice, and it's got lots of domain names available. So if you try for .com, go to .net. It might be available. Very important. And by the way, they also offer Google Apps. You can add Google Apps to your domain. Basically, you get everything you already love about the full suite of Google's productivity apps, Gmail, Calendar, Drive, Docs, the whole package. You already love and trust Google Apps for Gmail's 25 gigabyte storage and collaborating with chat and file sharing. I don't know if you know this, but Google is a huge company, so you can be, you know, they can be a little hard to get a hold of with your questions and concerns and support needs and things. But that's the best part. You get everything you love about Google Apps, but with the outstanding support of Hover. They make it easy, man. So I say it's a great solution for businesses. It's a very good company. Hover.com/Brian, B-R-Y-A-N, that is. You'll get 10% off. Come on now. Let's get back to the show. All right. We're rolling?
We're rolling.
We got Jimmy Schubert in the house on the Brian Callen Show.
On the Brian Callen Show.
Jimmy, I always say that you're one of the best comics, period.
You know, you say that, it's disarming because, we did that show at the Mint.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was a great Stella Lam contest. It was awesome to be on that show. And you just say the nicest things to me, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's not even about when you kill a room, which I've been watching you do, for 10 years. Starting in at Dublin's when you did that whole bit about the woman who had another woman attached to her head.
That wanted to be a country western singer, the congenital twins.
The congenital twins who wanted to be a country western singer.
Yeah.
You basically tell a real story and have everybody die it.
Yeah, man. I love it. I still love it, dude. I have a passion for it. I love making people laugh, you know.
You're a throwback. You're wearing a hat right now. You look like a guy who I wear too, Mac. You look like you should be driving a cab in New York or Boston in 1920. I love it.
Yeah. That's wicked pisser. Where are you guys going? To the Sox game? You know, me and my friend Bobby was in a bar smoking pot, drinking beers, shooting darts. Who walks in? Mismatch. Mismatch. I tell these people in Boston, will you please pronounce the letter fucking R?
Are you from Boston?
No.
That's a good Boston. That's a good Southie accent.
Thanks, man. I was just in Southie at the LOL Comedy Club. All those unpronounced R's go up into the atmosphere and they fall down in places like Texas and Long Island. Where people go, I got an idea. I go, no, you don't. You have an idea. That's people in fucking Boston. I got to go do a little wash.
Ooh,
I got to do a little wash.
You're from Philly, right?
Yeah, I'm from Philly.
Yeah.
Big Irish family, six brothers.
Six brothers.
My dad was a Philly cop.
Was he?
Yeah, my dad was a police detective. Worked some major cases in Philly.
Is that right?
Yeah. But there's this one case. It was like my dad's first case that I remember. I was about 18, but it was the rape of this woman lawyer. And they only found her because they were investigating a previous rape that happened like 2 years earlier. And it was like in the middle of winter. And the only thing that kept her alive was she was clinging to the steam pipe underneath the underground subway systems. And as it turns out, they found her body. They get her to the hospital. She's into a coma. She's be pretty bad. And these cops, my dad and the squad of detectives, worked around the clock to catch it. She was a lawyer, and the law firm offered $100,000 to anybody who can help them convict. And my dad and the rest of these guys worked around it. She was the sleeping beauty. and these guys
like
would
the
go,
verdict or something.
No, no, she was just in this coma, and these guys would like literally work around the clock. I mean, my dad would work Easter. My mom would get jealous, she said, because these guys would just sit around and talk about this woman who was in a coma. And they did all this work, and they worked tirelessly. And they finally caught the guy. He didn't get convicted of that one, but he got convicted of a previous one that he had committed. But
Who was the guy? Just some piece of shit?
Yeah, just some piece of, just some skell, you know. And then
thank God for dudes like that.
Yeah, but you know what's so funny? She comes out of the coma, and she had no idea who these guys were. She had no idea all the work they'd done. And these guys were kind of like, you know, sticking up for her and stuff like that. And she turned out to, like, she didn't know him. She was a little bit of a bitch. And it was like, it was kind of weird.
What a letdown.
Yeah, what a letdown. Like, but you know, it's kind of like, they just wanted to get the guy anyway. But, you know, that could be something. That was, she had a little girl. So it was somebody's mom, somebody's wife. So these guys really worked tirelessly. It's the first time I really got what my old man did. I was old enough to watch him go, you know, undercover. And, you know, they would go under in the subway system and act like homeless guys to try to find out and find witnesses that might have seen something. And they had a woman who saw it, but she didn't know why she was there. And it was like it caught up with her a couple months later. You know, she was just an older woman, but didn't make a good witness, but it was interesting. That's the kind of stuff my dad did, you know. And then he went to major crimes towards the last probably.
Which is what? What is major?
Major crimes is like art theft. Like there was a guy.
It's a lot better though, isn't it? Than having to deal with murder and rape.
Well, you know, everybody gives there's uniform cops, but then there's these guys, these detectives who are kind of like the last line of defense, holding the lid on the garbage can you call a city. I read an article in Psychology Today, which is interesting, because cops deal with other cops for 8 hours a day, and then they deal with scum of the earth. So they develop this mentality where if you're not another cop, you must be one of the other people. And sometimes they drink a little bit too much. They see stuff that most normal people probably couldn't fathom.
I was going to say, like, that's what's very, I mean, I was thinking about the child abduction unit for the FBI.
Yeah.
And they deal with fucking, I can't imagine having kids like somebody. That's just any parent's nightmare and anybody's nightmare. When I read about it, like, there's this girl, Abigail Hernandez, who was abducted. And I actually check the news all the time, hoping that they found her, you know, alive and safe.
Yeah.
I couldn't do a job like that. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I put a fucking bullet in whoever's head.
Well, that's why a lot of those guys drink. That's why a lot of them have failed marriages. I mean, the stuff they see, you can't unsee.
Yeah, and not only that, then you come home and your wife wants to talk about something trivial in the world of the victims that you know. The guy he left his rag in the back seat when he was washing my car. You know, it's hard to have something in common with that, right?
Yeah, well, you know, the fact that my dad had so many kids maybe helped him out a little bit.
How many kids?
We got six. I got six brothers.
Jesus.
You know, so no sisters. So my old man would come home to his little, and he was living his worst nightmare. You know, he was a Philadelphia police detective raising six criminals. You know, we didn't learn the metric system in high school. You know, so like if you throw 2.5 grams or 3.5, you get 5.5. Then you whack it up, and you got 2 for your head. And you got to resell the 3.5. You know, like my brother had at one point. You know, there was like everybody in the neighborhood sold drugs. All of us are lucky to have made it out of that neighborhood.
What was your mom like?
My mom's like the church lady. You know, she goes to church
just
for this.
The Irish stoic.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. That's my mom. You know, and she's a two-drink stretcher case. You know, the bartender drops the bar rag near her. She just gets all woozy. I actually have a videotape of my mom heckling me. I was in Philly going back for a show. I swear to God, my mom and dad show up for me. My dad's like a mason. They're like Shriners. They do a lot of shit. So my mom had a couple glasses of wine, and then she sits at a table. My brother, Bobby, they gave her another glass of wine. That was it. She's just heckling me.
I love my son.
Yeah, you know, and Richie Miller, the guy who was pacing back and forth. I could say, that's the guy's mom. I can't throw the guy's mom out. Whatever you say, you know. So it was weird. It's so funny. Sunday, I'm watching the tape.
I wish I'd been there.
It's so funny. I'm watching the tape, and my mom's on the couch going, oh, oh my. Oh my. Oh my. I go, yeah, Ma. I go, see, you were heckling all my.
So great.
Well, you get heckled by your own mom at a comedy show. There's nothing you can do to be after
that. But I wonder, like, you know, your comedy and choosing this life on the road and being an actor, and you're really good at both. I'll tell you that. But I wonder, and you've never really settled down. That must be because, to an extent, your family life was so chaotic, right? I mean, I don't know.
Well, that's interesting. I, you know, it's just, you know, for the, it was never a priority in my life. And I always looked at it as like a, you know, an antiquated kind of thing. Forever and ever, till death do us part. You know, one of us has to die to get out of this? Are you fucking kidding me? And look, I, you know.
There's no reason, you know, especially when you're on the road and you got all this tail throwing itself at you. Listen, you know what I'm saying?
Listen, you know, I'm not really a skirt chaser either. You know what yeah. I mean? I'm kind of like a lazy infielder. You know what I mean? You got to hit it right to me. I'll scoop it up and make the play. But I'm not making a diving grab down the third base line and, you know, throwing my back out.
That's making, a sports metaphor, ladies and gentlemen.
A sports metaphor, throwing on one knee for a chicks. Sports metaphor for my, no, it's, right. I just look, I've been in long-term serious relationships with women and I thought, you know, it's definitely something I think about, and I certainly don't want to have any regrets. I mean, you want to fully take a ride. I mean, I talk to people who have kids all the time, and they love it, and the kids bring such joy to their lives. And it's just
hard to compete with the road, though. Hard to compete with that adoring public embrace when you're crushing
a
room.
It's not that. It's also, you know, you don't want to have kids with the wrong person. Yeah. You know, next thing you know, yeah, I got two kids, and she's met a new guy, and she's moving to Australia, which means you're never going to see. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
or you know, move clear across country, and you know, I know guys. You know, a friend of mine's brother. You know, the wife got the kids, and she moved to Seattle, and he works in New York, and a majority of his time is spent going back and forth.
Deal with that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it's like, you know, I don't know, man. I definitely feel like there's a side of me that would love to have that. It's just being with the right person. And you think, I thought I've had it a couple different times. You know, love is for like, you know, the fighters, you know what I mean? Who are bound to lose, but still keep fighting, you know?
Jesus,
what I mean?
Jimmy.
You know, it's
that's
like
heavy shit. I'm going to write that down.
No, sorry, man. You know, but
you're like a poet.
I am. Partly truth. I'm a walking contradiction.
Take your shirt off. I hear you're doing the paleo diet.
I am
you lost some weight.
I am doing the paleo diet. I was just outside eating banana with my foot. That's true paleo. That's true paleo, man. You know, I just smashed a pterodactyl's head with a rock, and I just chewed on a skull for a little bit.
Yeah, what a man.
No, it is. It's a total dude's diet. My friend Dan French, who's a doctor, and, you know, he's a really smart cat.
Dan French a doctor?
He is. He's got a PhD.
Jesus.
He's got a PhD, and he's a rhetorician.
I did not know that.
Rhetorician.
He studies rhetoric, everyone.
Yeah, but it's, you know, what the way you deliver your message. And he's really, but he does it, and he lives in my building, so he kind of got me started on it. And I got to tell you, man, I really just love it. It's not like, you know, you need or want for anything, and it really, you know, it cuts down, you know, just take the sugars out and any of the bean stuff.
You feel better.
I do. You know what I feel? It's not just about a scale. It's also about the way my body feels. You know, it feels pretty good.
Well,
no inflammation in the joints.
You're not a stranger to your scotch. I mean, you like a hard. You like your spirits. I mean, you're not a pansy about stuff. You used to smoke too, right?
Yeah. You know.
You got clean.
Yeah, I clean. Well, I used to hang out with Kinnison, and you know, back in the day, bro. You know, you get a weekend in Vegas, and you get an ounce bag of blow sitting on a table. And there's Billy Idol and some rock and roller dudes. Like, everybody's nose is defeated. Everybody's just snorting up a storm. And then you're hanging out at the Olympic Gardens. You're right down there.
I know that place.
You're leaving at 7 in the morning. Yeah, what's up? You
listen,
know?
If we're all being honest, when I was a young man, I pulled a girl out of there and had a lovely time. Didn't pay her anything. Just said, why don't you come back? She goes, all right. And I was like, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, dude, we would go in there in the afternoon.
She had a great attitude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
Is that what you call it?
Sure.
Yeah.
So is that good
your,
kid.
Is that your vagina? Is that Steve Buscemi? What's going on there?
I think oh, shit.
I think it looks like an old catcher's mitt. She's probably seen about as many balls, too.
She was a lovely young lady, in fact, with a positive attitude.
Yeah.
That's the thing about the road. I mean, you can get people can get addicted to what it has to offer, which is anonymity, drugs, booze, sex, and just being alone for a lot of the day. And
well,
then,
you know, you certainly have to enjoy your own company because, you know, you can, like, there's, you know, you go places and you don't know people and, you know, you got your shows at night. And
yeah.
But, you know, lots of times you got to figure out how to use your time productively. And you know, it's not, like, I still love doing it, man. I still have a passion for it. I'm not, like, you know, I mean, I talk to some older cats and they're better, hey, you know what, hey, you know, it's great. I don't feel that way. I love making people laugh. And
so
whether there's 20 or 30 40 people in the audience or whether there's 250 in the audience, I still go up there and give it everything I got every night. And, I'm like kind of a real – I look at myself as like a real comedian. I mean, there's some people that
– You are.
You know, to kind of like – you know, some people like kind of are act – you know, that – and I do some acting too, and I know you do. But there's some people that it seems like they're just kind of like – it's like a, almost like a sideline or
well,
it's
or
a side-
they're Or they're doing stand-up because they want to further their acting career. For me,
yeah.
I always look at acting as another opportunity to get more visibility so I can get more asses in the seat.
That's right.
Yeah, that's how much I love stand up.
Yeah, but that's great. You know, you're you do it well too. I mean, I've seen, you know, it's the guys that do it. There's I had this great conversation with Don Marrero. We were over in Ireland. We were doing a thing. I had a bunch of family members come over, and he comes back and we were flying back, and he said to me, he goes, I'm so glad you invited your family to Ireland. He goes, because I'm never going to be able to do Italy and have my family come over because, you know, they don't do American comedy in Italy. But he goes, I wonder if your family realize how hard it was for you to do what you've done. And I said, what do you mean by that? He goes, well, Jimmy, how many famous baseball players do you know? And I said, well, there's 32 teams and 25-man rosters. It's about 750 guys. He goes, right. The NHL is a little less. It's about 650. And the NBA is about, 330 to 370, give or take a season for injuries. He said, how many comedians do you know? And I said, geez, I could probably – he goes, no, I'm talking about comedians that are alive that do it at a high level like we do. And I said, I could probably name about 60, 70 guys.
Maybe.
I'm going
with 40.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, as far as really good guys?
Yeah, yeah, okay.
On your level?
Yeah.
And Dom's level?
Yeah, and then he said to me, he goes, together we could probably come up with 100. I go, yeah, we could probably come up. And he goes, well, that's what I'm saying. That's how – statistically, you have a better chance of becoming a famous baseball player than you do
– 100%.
You know, so it's –
100%.
So when guys always say to me, I say, you're out there, you're able to make a living doing something you love to do. It's not, I mean, you don't realize that's a fucking monster accomplishment.
I'm going to just say this because I was in Houston and I'm about to shoot my next hour and I'm working on it. And I think I'm writing better than I've ever done, but I had a great show, right? I get up and I'm realizing that these people are laughing, you know what it is. It's like they're laughing fucking hard for an hour and, 10 minutes. And they're laughing harder than they do when they are in a movie like The Hangover, for example. I'm just saying, right? They are.
Right.
You know that.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I thought to myself, you know, the room is, you know, I got maybe 200 people in the room and it seats 450. And I thought to myself, I'm kind of doing this in, nobody's ever going to see this, really. I mean, it's not like it's going to get me famous or anything else. But at least in my heart, I know I've worked really hard to have a skill that very few people can have, and I am doing what I'm supposed to do. And whether 10 people, 200 people, and maybe no one, maybe, you know, the Hollywood power structure will never know what I'm capable of. But I thought to myself, this is very satisfying. You know, it's a bummer in some ways that we don't get the kind of recognition.
The respect.
You don't get respect and recognition. Not as much as, say, an actor.
Right.
But, you know, for me, I just sometimes that's a little bit tough, if I'm completely honest. Sometimes I kind of feel very lonely.
Right.
You know what I mean? I feel like, I just did a really good job. And these people want to take pictures and they said it was a great job, but nobody's ever going to know that.
Yeah, but here's the interesting thing. I was in Minneapolis. I was doing the House of Comedy up there. Yeah. And there was this guy I was watching. I got there a little early and I watched this guy. He had dinner by himself. Then he comes into my show and he sat by himself. And I was just checking out the room. And I got up and went up and had a great set. And the dude comes up to me afterwards. He said, I was at a funeral all day, and I was really sad, and I was crying. He goes, man, he goes, you made my night. He goes, I was just so bummed out.
I have that happen to me all the time.
And the funny thing is, what I think is the intrinsic value is that you have this room full of 250 strangers that sit in your room, and you don't know. A guy could have lost a job. He could have lost an aunt, a family member. Something could be going on. A guy could be thinking about committing suicide or whatever. You don't even know. And you get up on stage, and you have the ability to go out there and touch people and kind of move people with your art. And I think that's the value in it. And you say, nobody will ever know. But I think the people that are there know it. I think
there's no doubt. Dude.
You know what I mean?
It's a privilege. I really,
yeah.
When I'm on stage like that, you know, and I say it on stage sometimes, you know, at the end of my show, I just go, you know, you people make me feel like the luckiest human being on the planet. I can't believe I do for a living. I have a mic in my hand and I get to get up on stage and be a jackass. I can't believe it.
Yeah, but you know, the other thing is
I'm fucking my jawline. I got a beautiful body. But that's not important.
Listen, it's nice to look at that while you're laughing.
Well, to be that good looking and funny. And apparently, the New York Times. I'm not saying that's just what they say.
Mention, I don't want to listen. I don't want you to get a cramp patting yourself on the back. But the NCA, Joe Carcione said this guy is definitely a vegetable. I know what you're saying. It's a thing because you've done acting, you do stuff, and then like a year and a half later, the movie comes out. With stand up comedy, man, it's like a kind of an immediate thing, and you're making people laugh with something you thought of.
When you're on a set, you're doing a movie. I just did this movie; it's coming out soon. But you do this big movie, and you're in your trailer, but you're doing it in pieces, and it's like a month, and you're living in some shitty trailer, and it's never there's and nobody's really watching. You do your thing; it's fun to hang out with the actors, but it's definitely not as satisfying in any way as getting up and doing, from minute one to minute 60 or whatever it is.
It's definitely another way to be creative. I mean, you don't get that the gratification. I mean, for me, you have those years where you have this nice balance where you're doing an acting job and then you're doing some stand up and then you're doing some acting and I enjoy both. I think they're equally as fun. They're just fill different places, different voids in the creative process. So, but I have guys say to me, "Hey man, I killed in Milwaukee last night, and I can't get it." I go, "Look, one thing has nothing to do with the other.
True.
I mean, your stand up is here, and acting is over here.
That's it.
And not a lot of people know, but I'm a methadone actor.
I did not know that. Yeah,
I studied at the rehab center. Milton Stanislavski's.
Milton Stanislavski. Well, I met you through Patty Jenkins, who's an Oscar-nominated director / Director Guild Award-winning.
Yeah.
She wrote and directed the movie Monster and did. She's done. Now she's killing it.
Yeah, she's done a couple of episodes of Arrested Development. I mean, she's great. I love Patty. And
she did The Killing.
She's. It's so funny when she was.
The point I was making is always been very complimentary of your acting. And when someone like that says that when she's basically telling other people how good an actor you are, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I did her AFI thesis project, and it was supposed to be like a 7-minute project, but she wasn't concerned with the thesis process as much as she was using it to get jobs directing. And she did a great job, man. She was like she's like a real director. I mean, she's like an actor's director. Like you've done big things, you've done other stuff, but it's like when
she's got an incredible amount of human intelligence. Patty's one of the smartest people I've ever met.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's just one of the most unique.
And she wrote Monster. She's not just directing she's writing these projects.
She wrote it and she directed it.
Yeah, and she's also got, Velocity Rules as a car, this whole thing. She's got.
And I didn't even get an audition. Here's the point. All right, I don't want to bring it back to myself. End of the day, it would have been a better movie if I had gotten if she had wet my beak just a little bit.
We kicked 10% up upstairs to Paulie out of respect. Everybody gets the beak wet on this project.
What's funny is when I know a lot of really successful directors never get an audition. Put yourself on tape. We'll see what we can do for you.
Yeah.
But, listen.
It's funny? I audition. Like, I always travel with my camera just in case my agents. You got an audition? I go, I'm in Canada. I'm going to do it via videotape, okay?
Yeah.
And then I have to wrangle some feature act in to read my lines with me and put it on videotape.
I've done that many times. Bore fruit once.
Never bore fruit. It's an empty tree.
Never bore fruit.
I know. It's tough. It's like, it's like doing a phoner into a radio station versus actually being in the radio station.
Huge difference.
Yeah, it's a big difference.
Into somebody's eyeballs versus, can you watch yourself? I can't stand watching myself.
I can't watch, watching my earlier stand-up, I cringe. I get in a fetal position.
It
would be like the equivalent of watching yourself in a gay porn. Jesus, what were you thinking? What were you thinking? Whoa. Jesus, that hurt.
At least smile. What's with all the frowning? But that's exactly right, man.
Yeah.
It's and so it goes, man. Look, at least we're lucky. We get to earn a living. And there are a lot of actors. I would go fucking crazy if I was just an actor living and dying by my next job, I think. Then again, I'd probably be working more.
Yeah, well,
I'd have to work.
Neither one of them are easy. I mean, whether you're trying to make a living as an actor or a stand-up comedian, both are equally as tough.
If my kids want to be actors or stand-up comics, I'll be able to deal with a little bit more, but I'm going to do whatever I can to talk them out of it.
Yeah, well, you see people do that all the time. I mean, you know, the famous offspring of people like, I mean, you know, Montana Fishburne, that girl who's the Lawrence Fishburne's daughter, tried to tear a page out of...
I did a movie with Lawrence. Kim talked about it.
Yeah, tried to tear a page out of Kim Kardashian's playbook and kind of use that to... But I'm going, I mean, people forget. I mean, you know, Kim Kardashian basically became famous because she released the sex tape with Ray J.
Not only that, when they got the sex tape, the owner of Vivid said, look, let me reshoot some scenes. We'll make you look better. These scenes aren't good. Said, well, you'll make a fortune. Well, I think they sold it for $12 million or something like that.
Yeah.
And you can't, by the way, what people should know is that anytime you see a sex tape, the people in that tape signed off on that. There's no way anybody's making money without their explicit legal okay.
Yeah.
So Kim Kardashian and Ray J signed the papers.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just released a sex tape.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I'm the only one in it.
What's it called? Warm cheese?
No, I'm the only one in it. But the thing is, it's just I'm hoping someone picks it up.
You just hear my voice in the background going, "Attaboy, Jimmy, Attaboy, it's coming in the home here. Keep rolling the plate."
It's me and a piece of warm cheese.
You hear me? I'm just using baseball analogies the whole time.
That's funny. Yeah. I know. It's interesting, but some people have successfully launched their careers based off of something that would be called, you know.
Well, it's called but that's called not accomplishing anything. It's just called sensationalism. It's called becoming the most popular. It's just exactly like the Paris Hilton phenomenon.
Paris Hilton or Miley Cyrus.
Cyrus is actually really talented. Miley Cyrus has been singing and performing and dancing forever. Her voice is unbelievable. That's a very different example. But I mean, Kim Kardashian and Paris Hilton became famous. They were pretty and people just took pictures and they were socialites.
Yeah.
And then they both did these kind of pretty outrageous tapes and stuff.
Yeah. And
what my issue is not with them at all. I mean, I don't care about those girls or whatever. I've actually met Kim Kardashian when I was doing How I Met Your Mother. Nice girl. And I don't like to make fun of anybody or put anybody down because I don't think she deserves that. However, it is important to at least make a distinction between Kim Kardashian, who didn't necessarily accomplish anything, even though she works hard now. And I know she has a business and I'm sure she's busy.
Well, you have to. I mean, you know.
No. And I give her all the credit in the world for that. Whatever. Well, she's making great money. It is what it is. I just think we have a culture that supports in some ways and celebrates in some ways and puts a little bit too much emphasis on someone like Kim Kardashian when they should put more emphasis on other people who have in fact accomplished in the traditional sense of the word accomplished a lot more, developed and built a skill set that inspires, that moves, and that sets an example. That to me is who I want my daughter looking up to. Over someone like Kim Kardashian. Kim Kardashian represents glitz, preening, a form of vanity that women, a lot of women may glean to, may be drawn to for whatever, maybe there are social and biological reasons. I don't care. I'm not going to tell somebody not to be a cheerleader because they want to be a cheerleader or whatever it might be. But I just think that we need to know and articulate the difference. There is a difference between Ronda Rousey and Kim Kardashian.
Well, you talk about beauty. You talk about, you know, then you have all these glamorous, pretty people, which is, you know, celebrate. And then you have the kind of inner beauty, you know, that people have, you know what I mean? And it's interesting. You watch, you know.
Don't ever use inner beauty on my podcast again.
Sorry, bro. But I was listening to this great series of tapes by this guy John O'Donohue, and he's this kind of a Celtic spiritualist. He's a poet, but it's amazing. He talks about but all that out that glamour. I mean, you look at the Herculean effort that, you know, women go to with the average woman goes through 6 pounds of lipstick in her lifetime. That, you know, the 2.5 years of her lifetime is spent in a salon chair getting a cut, dyed, blown out, and styled. Yeah. She'll spend another year and a half of her life at home trying to recreate the same look.
I personally like lip liner and I like heavy eyeshadow. The kind of girl that most women say she's tacky, she's gaudy and slutty. Sign me up. But
yeah.
Keep going.
Yeah, you know, the gluing on of the false eyelashes.
No
the breast augmentation, the spray on tan,
bring it.
The shaving of the underarms, the waxing, the bleaching, the $750 shoes. You know, why don't you just try being a nice person? Has that ever occurred to you girls? Have you just, you know, maybe you could, you know, maybe
nice
just,
person. That's boring as shit. She's not blowing you in the back of some car.
No, you're right. There's something fun about, you know, the nuttier a woman is, the crazier. I mean, it's just
some guys are just addicted to that.
Oh, dude, come on. You know, crazy women
it's
are.
Good time.
It's fantastic it's and
good
bad.
Time.
I mean, bad in a relationship.
I'm not having kids with them, but it's a good time.
That's right.
All.
I'm not going to be the mother of my children.
That's all. As long as you understand, you're never going to be the mother. I will move you into my house, by the way.
Yeah, but, women like that, you like to hit it once and break away clean.
Well, that's a good voice. I would hit it. I would hit it for a year, then it'd break away really fucking messy. That was the Brian Callen song.
That's a Brian Callen song.
Oh, yeah. Get involved with a girl you know there's no chance you're going to marry. Fucking waste at least a year and a half on the a year in the relationship and a half a year on the breakup.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, the slow blank. I hate long goodbyes. I hate long. You know, it's so funny you talk about this, but I actually got dumped via text message by this woman I was in love with. And I thought she was the one. I swear to God, you asked me why I'm single, but I mean, I thought this girl was the girl. And then like 3 weeks before Christmas, I get this text message. I can't give you what you emotionally need. And it was with the unoriginality of the message. You seem like a nice guy and you deserve the truth. It's not you. It's me. I'm going, really? You thumb dumping me? Are you out of your fucking mind? I'm a grown ass man, bitch. I need a phone call. Why don't you just do it via Twitter? No longer at Jimmy Schubert. You know, in her defense, she didn't have a fax machine. But the point is, you know, I realized as all, you know, it's so funny because, you know that this has happened. Like, that's the thing about the cell phone and stuff. People use that technology for shitty fucking reasons. But I guarantee you, like back in the day, some dude got dumped via Morse code. You know that one. Dot, dash, dot, dot, dash, 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 dot. We're getting news from afar. It must be important. What's it? I can't give you what you emotionally need. Stop. You seem like a nice guy. Stop. Seriously, stop calling. Stop.
Stop.
Just stop. You know, some guy got, you know, some dude, you know, this happened. Some guy got dumped via carrier pigeon. You know that went down. Hey, bro, I don't know what that is, but there's a very aggressive pigeon outside your window with a note on his foot. Oh, it must be important. Someone cared enough to send a pigeon. What does it say? It says, it says, I can't give you what you emotionally need. You seem like a nice guy. You know, it's like that same breakup over and over again. It's like
over and over. The
standard, okay, great. What the fuck is it really? Could you just be honest with me and tell me, you know? You're a size queen. What? What's going on?
What's really fucking going on?
What's really going on?
Well, thank God for technology.
I'm seeing this drummer, this band I like, and he's knocked me up. Okay.
He's from the Sudan. He's 7 feet tall. I have a penchant for large Africans.
So you're a size queen.
I think that's where prejudice comes from. I've decided cock size because men are territorial, and if you know, it's like if somebody's been further down the road, we'll find another road. I always say it's why guys climb Mount Everest. Not for the view; it's just so they can stick their flag up there and be like, "I've been there, you haven't, motherfucker."
That's right. Well, it's like, you know, it's like the burqa. You know, why would you put a fucking,
it's my territory? I put the fence around it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like 1,000 years ago, some guy fucked another guy's brother. He goes, "That's it. You all wear burqa. Nobody will see you fucking except for the eyebrow." You know, that's it.
It's a very good. That's a very good Irish brogue, dude.
Thank you. That's a great Sinatra shoe. But I'm just saying, and I look at the women in this country, I go, you know, we might, you know, they should bring fucking burkas into this country. You know, because some women in this country, you don't have time to put your makeup on. You don't have time to shave the mole. Fucking throw the burka on. You know what I mean? Throw the burka on. You go
shave
out
the mole. Shave the fucking mole.
You didn't have time to, you know, it's like, you know, just throw. Yeah, some women don't want to, you know, you don't want to shave your legs. You just throw a fucking burka on. Go out and get the milk and eggs, you know?
I think a lot of women would find that very, very comforting. It's a lot easier to throw a fucking burqa on.
Just throw a burqa on. At some point, you go, all right,
there's a lot of societal pressure to look. Some women just don't give a shit, though, huh?
Yeah, well, you know the funny thing is, I was in Afghanistan with Steve Byrne and Drew Carey.
I was there with Steve Byrne. Yeah. Steve Byrne, I got to get him on here.
Yeah, and
good
dude,
friend of America's.
Yes, he is. He goes over, and I almost caused an international incident. I told him if they move the eye slot down over the mouth, the men might be a little happier and less ready to go to war.
Did you say that on stage?
I did say, good man. I almost caused an international incident. A couple guys and a couple of the indigenous people of the region were milling about in the background trying to figure out how to make a fucking improvised explosive device out of a refrigerator motor. Thank God I was only doing a short set.
Jimmy Schubert brings down the entire American military with his comedy. Are you a religious man?
I am a religious man. I'm a believer. I don't gym. And to me, my belief is a very personal thing. It's so funny. I have a rosary in my bag right now. You asked me that, but I do. I have a rosary. When I'm on the road,
very Catholic.
I do. I say a rosary.
It's very Buddhist, very Muslim, and very Catholic, love you, because all of them have rosaries, which is interesting to me.
Yeah. And I think for me, it sets me, I mean, you know, I, and I don't don't care whatever anyone else believes. For me, I've just seen too much of that kind of in my life to not believe it. And if you don't believe it, I feel sorry for you. I'm more power to you if you can be an atheist.
Yeah.
But I tend to believe that.
I just don't want to live in a world where there's no God. I don't like that idea. It's like Artie Lang one time was like, "Look, I happen to believe Jesus Christ walked the earth. I can't prove it, but that's what I believe." And I get that. There's just an idea of faith.
Yeah, and you know, you look at the Bible, and it's like, you know, forget all these people try to interpret it for you. If you just read it as a book, I mean, it's probably actually the original self-help book.
Absolutely.
Without
I mean, the lessons, the moral lessons, and by the way, the inspiration that people draw from the major religions is not. There's a reason they've been around a long time. Atheists tend to be very, very condescending to religion.
Well, look, you can say what you want. I know a lot of people make fun of Tim Tebow because he's a Christian, but you know, it always seems if you look at homeless shelters or you look at soup kitchens, they're always being run by people of a belief in God.
Of course.
I mean, when's the last time you saw an agnostic with a soup kitchen?
That's a very good point.
Or an atheist with a homeless shelter.
There are a lot of atheists that, in fact, the American founder of the atheist movement, and I can't remember his name, said that helping hands are a lot more effective than praying hands. But that's one way to look at the debate. I mean, I think that what's interesting is like Thomas Aquinas, who was a great lawyer and, in fact, was steeped in Greek philosophy and was a very, very linear thinker and a reasoned thinker. But he dealt with the issue of magnanimity, the notion that you can behave in a magnanimous manner. You can behave in a manner that is very friendly toward people but not feel it. And you may be doing it, in fact, for your own self, you know, worth and your own self-gain. And there are a lot of reasons. But one thing that religion deals with is the idea of how do you become a magnanimous person? How do you become someone who gives from his heart? Wouldn't you rather be that way? Why? Well, that's where faith jumps the line between reason and reality. The idea that, look, not everything has to be explained and measured. Sometimes if you give it up to a higher power or whatever, it creates a more generous person. I'm paraphrasing and not doing a good job.
Giving away all your worldly possessions. We'll call it the clumsy gesture of a spiritual gatecrasher.
Dude, that's a high level Irish brogue.
No, that's a high level Irish brogue. But you're right. I think it's funny because a lot of people, you know, they even say in the Bible, if you really believe, you pray when you're by yourself. You don't run out to church and pray in front of me and say, I believe.
Yeah.
But you're right. I think, it's not a scorekeeping thing. I mean, if you think you do it, you genuinely do it for, because...
There's also the notion in the Catholic religion, forgiveness and confession.
And I think you get more out of it than they do. I think by being that way. And I think, if you realize, we live in this giant ecosystem. It's a human ecosphere. It's like, we're all connected in some way.
Not only that, religion. I think the contribution, the major contribution of the Judeo-Christian ethic, and I include the Islamic movement in this as well, is that it's a radical idea, in fact, in human history, which was the idea that we are all of the same moral worth. We are all on the same level. We come from the same source, meaning that regardless of your skin color, your skill set, even your and your economic outlook and everything else, we are all human beings. We are all of the same father. We are all of the same worth. That's a very powerful, powerful idea. And I don't personally want to live in a world without it. Our judicial system is based around that idea. If you kill a homeless wretch or a mathematical genius, you're going to jail for the same amount of time, theoretically, at least in the eyes of the law, because both are human beings. Both have inalienable rights. Both are of the same moral.
The problem is
that's a religious idea, though.
No, I get it.
It's not Aristotle's idea. It's not Socrates' idea. Rome was steeped in Greek philosophy, and the Roman Empire was crumbling. Religion, a lot of times, is the bridge between that Stoic philosophy and something else. It's very important.
No, it is. The problem is that when you get to these lunatic fringe elements that kind of radicalize
the fundamentalists.
Whether it's the extreme Christian right or the
they're dealing with religion with truth with a capital T. That's not the way to look at religion.
Well,
it's about symbology.
Yeah, and then you try to marry it to like they live in a theocracy where they can't, like, it's funny because in these Middle Eastern countries that are theocracies, I mean, they introduce science and they they discredit the science because it doesn't agree with the religious philosophy.
Well, where that's
of
going on in this country too, by the way.
No, I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure it is.
A lot of board of educations are trying to teach creationism and put it on the same on par with the theory of evolution. The problem with creationism, the problem with is that it is essentially this idea that, you know, there's no science behind it, but we were created by a higher being. Okay, I have no problem. You want to believe that? That's your personal believe that. That'll be your personal faith. You cannot measure that. You cannot prove that in any scientific capacity.
Creationism means people came from primates.
No, creationism is actually the idea that we came from a higher being. God created man whole as he is today, whereas the vast bulk of evolutionary science
says we came
we evolved into this. Now, I understand that there are questions with consciousness and the idea of discovery and invention that human beings as animals possess that are so far radically different than what animals have.
Now, do you think animals have a soul?
I don't know. I don't get into those debates because I don't know, but I will say that there are fundamental differences between human beings and animals.
Yeah.
That is, and you can sum it up into one word, potential. Human beings continue to evolve and change. Animals do not I'm talking about in terms of our consciousness, in terms of our invention, the things we invent, the things we discover, the things that we execute. And sometimes we do that for reasons that go beyond our mathematical biology. I am so fucking smart.
God damn it, bro. My IQ just went up 15 points.
Your mouth,
your mouth
was just hanging open. You were just looking up at me, even though we're on the same level.
I'm worshiping you now. I mean,
That's
fantastic.
The point of this podcast was to get Jimmy Schubert over on the Brian Callen worship
On board. We're on board. But no, you're right. I agree with you 100%. I think it's interesting. I think people always try to – I think that – philosophy is really kind of simple. I think the universal law of life, I think whatever you put out into the universe comes back to you tenfold. I think that's a kind of a simple, I mean, to break it down in a simplistic way, I think, you know, but people always try to convolute that and complicate that so that they're not, you know, and it's like, just let it go. Just be that guy. People walk around pretending to be this person. I go, no, just be that guy.
Some of the best therapy for addicts and for people who are psychologically fucked up is to put them in a position where they're helping other people with the same problems. A lot of times, what a surprise, what a miracle, those problems go away. If you have issues, and we all do, but some people have real psychological hangups, put yourself in a position where you're helping people for no other reason than it's a good thing to do. It's what you get out of it, like you were saying.
Yeah.
It's what you get out
when
of it.
When we went over to Afghanistan to do shows for the military, everybody says, you're going to go over there to do shows, but I got so much more out of it.
It was the best 11 days of my life.
To make those guys laugh and to do that, and then they come up to you and you talk to them. And I'm telling you, man, I really did. It made me feel really great. And these guys are like over there in this horrible situation. These guys just get done from a firefight 45 minutes later.
It's incredible.
Steve Byrne will tell you they were sitting at our show laughing. I'm going, oh my God, this is it goes back to the original conversation we were having about that it is really kind of a gift that you get to be able to, you're able to touch people and move people with it. I just think that, you know, that what is that old saying? The devil hates the sound of laughter. So every time I'm on stage kind of creating laughter, seems like I'm sort of pissing off the devil. But, you know.
But you're not.
But we do live in a world and there is evil. There's real evil out there. And it's kind of this, you know, it's like.
There's both, right? Yeah. Human beings are bipolar apes capable of doing terrible things and really beautiful things for, you know.
Well, that's the quote, China. It seems, Mr. Gitch, most people are capable of anything, but in the right circumstance.
That was a very good accent.
That was a horrible John Huston. Mr. Gitch, seems most people are capable of anything, but in the right circumstances.
By the way, what's funny about John Huston is most of our listeners probably have never heard of John Huston.
Most people don't even know fucking John Wayne is.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
You ask young people who Paul Newman is, and they're like, I don't know. I've heard of him.
Greatest fucking actors ever to live.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
That's right.
Yeah.
Where are you going to be, Jimmy Schubert?
I'm going to be in Vegas at Brad Garrett's Club. I'm going up there the 25th, 26th, and 27th.
I like Brad Garrett.
Yeah, it was my first time doing that room. I'm real excited because everybody says great things. And
if you want to laugh, you're crazy if you don't go to Jimmy's.
We're up there doing.
Have you done the American Comedy Club? By the way, this weekend I'm going to be. I think we're airing this Thursday. This weekend, tonight I'm going to be at the At Buffalo Helium. Have you done that club?
Buffalo Helium. No, I've done the one in Philly.
That's great.
And have you done the LOL club in Boston?
Not yet, but I'm doing it in January.
They just opened up, man. It's a great club.
I can't wait. You love it.
It's right in the Western Hotel. It's right there in Southie.
Yeah, it's great. I'm doing it in January.
And then I'm going to Chicago on November 5th to the 10th. We're doing some shows in Chicago and then off
to the
Zanies on Well Street.
Where can people find you?
They can find me at jimmyschubert.com, at Twitter, at Jimmy Schubert.
You got to start being a guest all the time.
Are you kidding me? I'd love to,
You're that good. I'm serious. You're the kind of guy that should be a fixture all the time.
I'd love to, man. I also do. If people go to my website, you know, we do a podcast.
I'm not doing your fucking podcast.
No,
sorry, that just popped out.
No.
Sorry, buddy. Sorry.
Listen, why don't you shut down your podcast and come over here and be my sidekick? All right. Seriously,
I'll tell you what. I'll let you season the conversation. You can season. I'll let you fucking season.
Listen, you just drop participles. Oh,
that's all.
That's just bathe in my greatness. Bask in my glow.
But I
appreciate you having me on, man. It was fun to do. I was very excited when Mike told me I was getting ready to do your podcast.
Yeah.
You do a lot of the, you work out. You do the mixed martial art workout.
I am genetically gifted, dude. What was that question?
No, I know.
I do a little jiu-jitsu, a little boxing.
I know you're a product of superior genetic breeding.
Well, I'm going to play tennis at 12:30. I'll tell you that. Taking a private lesson.
Well, you know what I started doing? I was taking that Krav Maga. I took a couple Krav Maga classes.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, it's nasty shit. No, it's nasty shit, but it's Jewish karate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not kidding you. One of the first moves they teach Jewish karate. Well, basically, I mean, they teach you to the Mossad, but one of the first moves they teach you, if someone comes at you, you slap them with a lawsuit.
No,
I was grappling with a guy.
Make an injury and sue the guy.
No, listen, I was grappling with a guy, and his gi was a little baggy, so I took it a couple inches on the shoulders. It's a Jewish karate. Every time I broke a board, I had to pay for it. But let me tell you something. It was a fantastic workout. It was fantastic.
Jimmy Schubert, ladies and gentlemen.
Zing, foul, ging.
We'll
be weak all here.
Enjoy your fruit capo. He'll be here all weekend here in the Catskills, ladies and gentlemen. Enjoy your borscht.
You know what's so funny? You know our friend Mike Burton teaches that. Dude, I would torture him. Mike teaches right there on the...
Oh, does he?
Yeah, Mike Burton teaches. Yeah. But he was teaching the class, and I would just like bust his chops. Like, they're the jokes I would be doing
to
him while I was trying to teach a class.
Great.
And he goes, Schubert, don't do
Schubert?
Like, I throw money down. I throw a couple dollars down. I go, when the guy goes for it, you knee him, chop him. That's one of the moves they teach.
Jewish humor, ladies and gentlemen.
Come on.
All right. Well, listen. Now that the podcast has clearly been canceled, I appreciate all the time you spent.
Now that the power's being shut, Hollywood have shut us down.
That's it.
No wonder you're not working in show business, Schubert.
I think my mother was actually Jewish from Spain and pretended to be Italian. Well, I'm doing a genome test for that.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I know I look like a Viking. What with my fucking...
Well, dude, look at my name, Schubert. Schubert. People think that... People think I'm Jewish. They spell
it
with a...
It's a German name,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm actually half Irish, half Jewish. I drink so I get the refunds back in the bottle. Good day!
On that level, ladies and gentlemen, a man who brings the podcast down to the level of a goddamn goat, and I'm having him back as often as I can.
So,
I don't know what that means. I don't know what goat means. Schubert, you are one of the best.
Dude, thanks for having me on.
I'm not kidding when I want you on all the time.
I'm around. We're doing it. We're on the network.
I'll have my people call you. 2014 is almost wide
Harvard,
open.
Have the guy with the Harvard degree call me. Hey, how are you? I'll just go off on those stupid jokes.
That's all.
Yeah.
You written any books, Jimmy? Anyway. Yeah, you're working on one.
I am working on one. It's called Jimmy Schubert, I Finally Overcome My Crippling Shyness.
At Barnes & Noble, ladies and gentlemen, in about 3 years. This is the Brian Callen Show. Oh, we love you.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show. Be sure to visit briancallen.com for information about this episode as well as past and future episodes. You can follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Callen and like him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Brian Callen Comedy. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.